This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Most of us have had moments where we don't like what we see in the mirror, but for some people, those moments don't pass. They linger, they loop, and they start shaping how we move through the world. So when does concern about appearance become something that needs support? Well, joining us is Susan Rossall, a cognitive neuropsychologist and from Swinburne's Centre for Mental Health.
Susan, hello, good afternoon.
Oh, we've got you. Hi. Good. The phones are working. Fabulous. Susan, before we get into the research, when concerns about appearance move beyond everyday insecurity into something more serious, what does that look like in everyday life for people?
Yeah. So that becomes a mental health condition called body dysmorphic disorder. And it's a really debilitating condition where individuals obsess about over perceived flaws in their own appearance. And it can lead to real significant stress and life disruptions. So the sorts of things that I'm talking about, and I'm just going to give a very general one because there's lots of different body parts it can affect. My nose is too big and constantly checking it in the mirror, constantly asking for reassurance, constantly asking other people what they think of their nose shape and size. This is quite different from what we're talking about when we're talking about eating disorders, which is obviously about fear of fatness. Mm. This is other parts of the body that they become very preoccupied with.
It sounds like it takes a lot of energy. It must be exhausting for these people.
It's completely exhausting. And what we find with the majority of people that have body dysmorphia is they become very socially isolated because they don't want people to look at them in the outside world, and they're constantly checking things in the mirror. Or there are other people that avoid the mirror, but either way, it takes over their life.
Let's talk about your research, analysing 40 studies, nearly 30 treatment trials. When you step back and you look at the full picture, Susan, what stood out to you the most?
Yeah, so look, we've been working on treatment, and I think I've spoken to you on your show about it multiple times now, is, you know, this is a condition that's starting to reach everyone's awareness, and so we want to know whether we've got treatments that work. And what seems to be the case is we do have some treatments that work, a psychotherapy called cognitive behavior therapy, and the evidence is good that, you know, 70% of people are overall improving. So that's leading us in a positive direction. I guess the thing that you're going to ask me next is there any negatives? And yes, there was, unfortunately, that those improvements don't last, which is now leading us to scratch our heads a little bit.
When someone is constantly worried about how they look, what is this kind of therapy actually trying to change? Is it changing how they think or their behavior or how they feel? What does it work on?
Yeah, so one of the key elements of the therapy that we know is the one that leads to the most success is a part of the therapy is called exposure and response prevention. That sounds all a bit in very big terms. But what it means is exposing people to their body part that they don't like and really challenging their thoughts about it and making them assess it in a different way. And what happens is people don't like confronting these anxiety-provoking situations. But when we do and we boost their thoughts about it in a more positive way, then we start to see some changes.
Susan, I'm just thinking of people that I've come across in my life that perhaps do feel uncomfortable going out to situations or to social situations, etc. And I remember someone wasn't happy with the way they looked, and the fear of going out in what seemed like a completely mundane sort of thing to do for the rest of us was huge.
Yeah. I really absolutely. Yeah.
Now,
so we see this in we get calls all the time, especially in the summer. Going to the beach is extremely troublesome for a lot of people, especially people with body dysmorphia, because of the fear of being seen in a swimsuit.
Can body dysmorphia, can it start off with something small? Like you mentioned, the nose example before, where you might just look one day and say, I don't like the look of my nose, but then it gradually creeps in and gets worse over time?
That's exactly what we see, and we've done some other research looking at what those what we call precipitating factors are, and just, you know, very mild comments when we're children about, oh, you don't look good in that, a little bit of teasing at school, sometimes that can lead to bullying, and I know this is a real topic of interest at the moment in the whole of Australian society, the social media comparison and the fact that our adolescents and our youth have had these phones in our pockets where they've been able to look and compare their body parts to other people on the internet. It's a real concern that people develop ideas from that.
I mean, we know that kids can be awful to each other in the schoolyard, yet alone on social media. Now, let's talk about a low mood and depression. That played a big role here. How much does untreated depression get in the way of long-term progress?
Yeah, so I've been talking about this in the media a lot lately. So one of the things that we see is that people actually present themselves to GPs, so their local GP, about their depression as opposed to their body image issues, and don't raise their body image issues. And actually treating depression can really help and be certainly a first step in making sure that we're on the right path with people with body dysmorphia, and getting it out of the way before we start the real serious work, I guess, with dealing with their unusual ideas about their body.
We're chatting with Susan Russell from Swinburne University, Swinburne Centre for Mental Health, about body dysmorphic disorder. Susan, low mood and depression we spoke about then, when you go and you're looking at the treatment for that, there's one-on-one, there's groups, there's online, etc. Did any of them tend to have a better result or a more long-term result?
Yeah, so I think dealing with the long-term depression and anxiety that is associated with BDD, unfortunately, people often don't want to go to groups because they don't want to talk about their body part or in front of other people. And online, people can drop off and lose motivation. So certainly making sure that you're in a good CBT program, the CBT helps with your depression, anxiety, as well as your body image issues. That's what we're really recommending to people, and also recommending that they don't drop out of therapy just because they've done the 10 or 12 sessions that are available on Medicare. Keep going with that, because what we do see is long-term relapse if people drop out.
Do you reckon the government should look at increasing the numbers of funded spots?
I absolutely do. Absolutely, without any doubt whatsoever. I think 12 isn't enough. Yeah.
If that conversation did bring anything up for you, support is available. Just head to joy.org.au/support.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.